Let's turn to 2 Kings chapter 8. Then Elisha spoke to the woman whose son he had restored to life, saying, "Arise and go, you and your household, and stay wherever you can, for the Lord has called for a famine, and furthermore, it will come upon the land for 7 years." So the woman arose and did according to the saying of the man of God, and she went with her household and dwelt in the land of the Philistines 7 years. It came to pass at the end of 7 years that the woman returned from the land of the Philistines, and she went to make an appeal to the king for her house and for her land. Then the king talked with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, "Tell me, please, all the great things Elisha has done." Now it happened as he was telling the king how he had restored the dead to life, that there was the woman whose son he had restored to life, appealing to the king for her house and for her land. Then Gehazi said, "My lord, O king, this is the woman, and this is her son whom Elisha restored to life." And when the king asked the woman, she told him. So the king appointed a certain officer for her, saying, "Restore all that was hers, and all the proceeds of the field from the day that she left the land until now." Now notice the timing of this event. It's clear that when this story happened, Gehazi was still the servant of Elisha. What that means is that this part of the book is not in chronological order. In other words, here is a story that is still referring back to the time before Gehazi was stricken with leprosy. And so it evidently occurred in the middle of Joram's reign. And if you want to check back the famine situation in 2 Kings 4, verses 38 to 44 would likely belong to that time of famine. Well, notice this woman didn't leave the land just arbitrarily. She left because God had told her it was the thing to do. Now, that's interesting, especially in relation to the book of Ruth, because there is no specific statement that told them to go leave the land during a time of famine. God told this woman before the famine began. And the famine would suggest God's judgment on Israel. And so she had specific direction from Elisha to escape judgment. Now, she obeyed, even though she could have a lot of questions in her mind. People might say, "Well, why are you leaving? This last season has really been good." Or, "What will happen to my property?" Or, "How will we live in a foreign country?" One of the things we need to learn to do is to be obedient to the Lord, even though we have questions. Questions will arise as we encounter life. There will be questions about what should we do and what will happen if we do this or that. I believe one of the things we need to learn to do is truly seek the Lord in His Word to gain understanding and then be sensitive to His Spirit that He can direct us. And notice this woman did not just return according to whim. She returned after following God's direction. In other words, He said it would be for 7 years. So when the 7 years were up, she came back. And so she immediately goes to the king to make request regarding her land. Now, that shows some decadence in society as well. Somebody had taken over her land when she left. Sort of like a lot of people think, "Well, I mean, this is available? Sure, I'll take it." Now notice how providential God operated in this situation. The king was asking about miracles. "Tell me all the great things that Elisha has done." I think he just wanted to be entertained. And so just at the time that he's telling about how Elisha had restored people who were dead, right at that time, the mother appears asking for her land, and it's the very one that had experienced having her son raised from the dead. And so the king restores her land and the proceeds of her land while absent. You see how it does show that God has providential care over those who trust Him, even if they live in the midst of a society that is full of ungodliness, and even if the religious situation is very bad. You know, we can see parallels of our same kind of need today. We have society that is really devoting itself to wickedness, and we have many church situations that are also doing the same. And Sometimes people wonder, how can you function? This should give us some encouragement, because here was a woman in a very disadvantaged situation, and the Lord intervened for her. He gave her direction, and then he intervened for her in terms of when she came back after the judgment had fallen on the rest of society. And that brings us to the next part, beginning at verse 7. Then Elisha went to Damascus, and Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, was sick, and it was told him, saying, "The man of God has come here." And the king said to Hazael, "Take a present in your hand, and go to meet the man of God, and inquire of the Lord by him, saying, 'Shall I recover from this disease?'" So Hazael went to meet him, and took a present with him of every good thing of Damascus, 40 camel loads. And he came and stood before him, and said, "Your son Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, has sent me to you, saying, 'Shall I recover from this disease?'" And Elisha said to him, "Go say to him, 'You shall certainly recover. However, the Lord has shown me that he will really die.'" Then he set his countenance in a stare until he was ashamed, and the man of God wept. And Hazael said, "Why is my Lord weeping?" He answered, "Because I know the evil that you will do to the children of Israel. Their strongholds you will set on fire, and their young men you will kill with the sword, and you will dash their children and rip open their women with child." So Hazael said, "But what is your servant, a dog, that he should do this gross thing?" And Elisha answered, "The Lord has shown me that you will become king over Syria." Then he departed from Elisha and came to his master, who said to him, "What did Elisha say to you?" And he answered, "He told me you would surely recover." But it happened on the next day that he took a thick cloth and dipped it in water and spread it over his face so that he died. And Hazael reigned in his place. Remember Hazael in relation to Elijah's ministry. 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 15 and following. You remember Elijah was so weary of ministry to the ungodly that he just wished he could die. And God met him in the desert, and you have the episode of the earthquake and the fire and the wind. And God told him, "You go back up to the north, and I want you to anoint 3 ministers of judgment. You're supposed to anoint Hazael to be king of Syria. You're supposed to anoint Jehu, and you're supposed to anoint Elisha." Now, when you go back and look at that paragraph, you find that it seems that Hazael was to be anointed first. He said, "Go by the way of Damascus." We have no record that Elijah did that. Then Jehu is to be anointed, and then Elisha. Now, it makes you wonder what would have happened if Elijah had anointed in that order. It makes you wonder if Elisha's ministry would have been more effective if it would have been preceded by these other ministers of judgment. It's something to contemplate, and we don't have the answer. But one of the things I think we should remember, when God says, "Do it this way," we should do it this way. The statement that Elisha makes to Hazael has some puzzling aspects to it. Now, Hazael's sending a present to Elisha is not too surprising, because remember, the pagan mindset is to give the god a big reward in the hope that you'll be blessed by him. The believer's mindset is to thank God for blessings already received and devote yourself as a living sacrifice in light of the blessings already received, as you see in Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. But you see, Ben-Hadad has a pagan mindset, so if I give a big present to the man of God, well, then he'll give me a good answer in terms of my sickness. And so his question was, "Will I get well? Will I recover from this disease?" And the text looks like it's saying 2 different things. It's almost as if Elisha were saying, "Well, yes and no. You will certainly recover." In other words, ordinarily you would recover from this disease. But yet, on the other hand, you're really going to die. That's the way it seems to me how to make sense of the way it's written here. And so Hazael had a message to give to his lord, the king, And he chose to give part of it. He chose to give the part about you'll recover. And he chose to take the part about helping Ben-Hadad to die. So he went in there and murdered him by putting a cloth, a wet cloth over his face, which must mean that Ben-Hadad was not in good shape at all, because a person in good shape could have pulled that cloth off and been okay. Anyway, you can see that Hazael is a vicious man. I mean, when he had a chance, he rose up against his master and killed him. And his reign that followed was marked by viciousness, and Elisha was saddened by what he knew would happen with Hazael's vicious behavior as he attacked the nation of Israel. That brings us to verse 16. Now in the fifth year of Joram the son of Ahab, king of Israel, Jehoshaphat having been king of Judah, Jehoram the son of Jehoshaphat began to reign as king of Judah. He was 32 years old when he became king, and he reigned 8 years in Jerusalem. And he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, just as the house of Ahab had done, for the daughter of Ahab was his wife, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord. Yet the Lord would not destroy Judah for the sake of his servant David, as he had promised him to give a lamp to him and his sons forever. In his days, Edom revolted against Judah's authority and made a king over themselves. So Joram went to Zair and all his chariots with him. Then he rose by night and attacked the Edomites who had surrounded him and the captains of the chariots, and the troops fled to their tents. Thus Edom has been in revolt against Judah's authority to this day. And Libna revolted at that time. Now the rest of the acts of Joram and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? So Joram rested with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. Then Ahaziah, his son, reigned in his place. Now, do you notice that Jehoram had an 8-year reign? And I probably should mention here that sometimes there will be a discrepancy in spellings of names when you move from Chronicles to Kings. And so you'll find that, and you have to go by the context to tell who it's talking about. Anyway, verse 18, he has sins like Ahab. And it describes why. It's because of his marriage connection to Athaliah. Remember in 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 26, if you go on down a little further, it says that Ahaziah was 22 years old when he became king. He reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Athaliah, the granddaughter of Omri, king of Israel. So he's got a marriage connection there. And it says that he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel, for the daughter of Ahab was his wife, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord. So you have a man who is really connected to this evil house of Ahab. And I'd like you to turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 21 to get a little more of an idea of what he was like. 2 Chronicles chapter 21, it says, Jehoshaphat rested with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. Then Jehoram, his son, reigned in his place. He had brothers, the sons of Jehoshaphat, Azariah, Jehiel, Zechariah, Azariahu, Michael, and Shephatiah. All these were the sons of Jehoshaphat, king of Israel. Their father gave them great gifts of silver and gold and precious things with fortified cities in Judah, but he gave the kingdom to Jehoram because he was the firstborn. Now when Jehoram was established over the kingdom of his father, he strengthened himself and killed all his brothers with the sword and also others of the princes of Israel. You notice Jehoshaphat had appointed this son to be king, but he gave rich presents to his other sons, and so after Jehoshaphat died, then this son, who was appointed king, killed his brothers, it seems likely, in order to get their wealth. And so you can see that God's judgment was certainly due for a man like this. And it wasn't just due for the man, it was due for the people that helped him do it. That's what is often not thought of too much. You know, kings cannot accomplish great evil all by themselves. They have other people helping them do it, and those other people get benefits from the king by helping do the jobs he wants them to do. That same kind of thing happens today when people choose to do evil. There'll be leaders who choose to do evil things, and it's not just them. People will help them do evil things. And so there is judgment that would certainly be due to both Judah and Jehoram. But you notice back in 2 Kings chapter 8, it says that God did not do this. He didn't destroy Judah for the sake of his servant David. And so, what happened? In other words, both the king and the people deserve judgment. But when you read further in 2 Kings chapter 8, you find that in the king's days, that means in Jehoram's day, verse 20, Edom revolted. In other words, Edom was like a vassal state that was giving allegiance to Judah, and they probably had to pay tribute. They decided, we don't want to do this anymore. So they revolted, and so the king went to war with them to make them come back into line. And apparently, from verse 21, that somehow he got surrounded by the Edomites. And so he arose by night and attacked them and managed to escape. So he barely escaped this revolt. And notice how far the kingdom has fallen from the glory days of Solomon and David. But not only that, if you turn back to 2 Chronicles chapter 21, it tells you how the king died. 2 Chronicles 21, verses 12 to 15. And it talks about this. It says, because you have not walked in the ways of Jehoshaphat your father, or in the ways of Asa king of Judah, but have walked in the way of the kings of Israel, and have made Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to play the harlot like the harlotry of the house of Ahab, and also have killed your brothers, those of your father's household who were better than yourself. Behold, the Lord will strike your people with a serious affliction, your children, your wives, and all your possessions, and you will become very sick with the disease of your intestines until your intestines come out by reason of the sickness day by day. Moreover, the Lord stirred up against Jehoram the spirit of the Philistines and the Arabians who were near the Ethiopians. They came up into Judah and invaded it and carried away all the possessions that were found in the king's house and also his sons and his wives, so that there was not a son left to him except Jehoahaz, the youngest of his sons. After all this, the Lord struck him in his intestines with an incurable disease. Then it happened in the course of time, after the end of 2 years, that his intestines came out because of his sickness. So he died a severe death. He died in pain. It says, so he died in severe pain. And his people made no burning for him like the burning of his fathers. So you see, this man did wicked things. He helped the people do wicked things. And God brought judgment on both him and his people. God did not just let it go. Well, what follows? If you go back to 2 Kings chapter 8, you find that Ahaziah, his son, reigned in his place. Now, he's the youngest son. All of his older brothers had been killed. And so, I guess I should have told you, keep your finger in 2 Chronicles, because in 2 Chronicles chapter 22, it tells a little about that. It says, the inhabitants of Jerusalem made Ahaziah, his youngest son, king in his place, for the raiders who came with the Arabians into the camp had killed all the older sons. So Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, reigned. He was 42 years old when he became king, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Athaliah. Oh, this guy is connected to a very bad person, too. His mother is Ahab's daughter. And it says in 2 Chronicles chapter 22, verse 3, he also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother advised him to do wickedly. Therefore he did evil in the sight of the Lord, like the house of Ahab, for they were his counselors after the death of his father to his destruction. He also followed their advice. And he went with Jehoram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, to war against Hazael, king of Syria, at Ramoth-Gilead. And the Syrians wounded Joram. Then he returned to Jezreel to recover from the wounds which he had received at Ramah when he fought against Hazael, king of Syria. And Azariah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, went down to see Jehoram, the son of Ahab in Jezreel, because he was sick. So you see, this man had an evil reign because of his marriage, family relationships to Ahab's family. Now we'll go back to 2 Kings again, and you can see that in verse 28 it talks about how that he joined up with Israel to go to war against Hazael of Syria. And the king of Israel was wounded, and so Ahaziah went down to Jezreel to see the king of Israel, who was recovering from his wound. Now that is setting the stage for the next chapter. And so you can see that what we have is a three-phase Ahab connection to the southern kingdom. You know, these troubles were set in motion by Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat was a godly king. He followed God. God blessed him in many ways. But he could see that it was economically and strategically advantageous to form an alliance with the northern kingdom. So he formed an alliance with Ahab, and he helped Ahab do stuff. And God rebuked him at various times. But he cemented this alliance with the marriage of his son into Ahab's household. Now, you see, in his lifetime, it looked like it worked. You had these strategic advantages. You had economic advantages. Wasn't that great? It wasn't great. It was the seed of disaster. And so, even though Jehoshaphat thought he could handle this, he thought that he could do this and get by, he set in motion disaster for the next generation. And so Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, reigns in Judah, but Jehoram is married to the daughter of Ahab. So here's this terrible influence that's right into the kingdom, in the southern kingdom. So he does bad things, and then his son is still connected to that family, and it sounds like, when you read various texts, that his son actually married into that family also. So he has this input from Ahab's household, and he does disastrous things. And of course, as we'll see later on in the book of Kings, Athaliah will be prominent in further disaster in the southern kingdom, because when she sees her chance, she tries to destroy all of the Davidic line that's alive and didn't quite make it because one little child was hidden away. Now, do you notice in this chapter what we have? We have an evil king, an evil people, and God is bringing judgment on them, but he also is dealing individually with people who happen to be in that society who are following him. There was a woman whose son that he had restored to life. She was a disadvantaged person, and she was living a righteous life because God is giving her specific direction how to respond to the situation where he's going to bring judgment on the rest of society. And then when she comes back, according to the direction that she had been given, she comes back at the precise time that Gehazi is telling stories about Elisha's great works, and particularly the story of how this woman's son had been raised from the dead. And so the king is favorably disposed to help her. So you can see how that God is actually intervening in the lives of individual people that are caught in that society. At the same time, he is clearly bringing judgment against wicked kings and wicked people as they pursue wickedness more and more. And one of the ways that God brings judgment is not just in the calamities that befall people as they pursue those paths, but the open door in front of them to pursue those evil paths. Part of the judgment that comes is God withdrawing himself and giving them over to do more and more wicked things. You can see that happening both in the society and in the kings as they operated there in that society. And then, of course, God brings judgment in terms of other nations coming in and attacking, and judgment in terms of the punishments specifically of the king, for example, when he had that severe disease, and people when they were afflicted. I think one of the things we need to remember as we read these accounts, it's that God is not asleep. God sees what's going on. And we have temptations sometimes to think, well, I know I really shouldn't do it this way, but I'm going to because it's going to be an advantage. Remember, it will always be a short-term advantage if you have gone against what God has said. And so these accounts that have been written are written so that we take note and see the sequence of what happens. Jehoshaphat did something. It looked like it was an advantage. And then he got into big trouble. Remember, he went up there to help Ahab, and it seemed like he barely escaped with his life. And God rebuked him, and he had other projects that he did. Why are you helping the enemy of God? But he set things in motion that became absolutely disastrous for his descendants and for his kingdom. And we'll see more of that disaster in the house of Jehoshaphat as we proceed through this sequence of events in 2 Kings.